Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
I know people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome back to a new edition of the Fenway Rundown podcast. Chris Cotillo in Massachusetts, Sean McAdam for the final time on this pod in Fort Myers, Florida. He will be saying goodbye to America's slowest moving city, and I mean that both in terms of traffic and social life at some point. As you listen to this on Tuesday, we're going to finish up at least the spring training part of the podcast with one of our mailbag episodes. We've done a few of them. We always enjoy the questions, have some great submissions from our subscribers on the Red Sox Insider Text program. Sean, these wonderful people asked us questions. How in the world were they able to?
Well, it's a simple answer to that very prescient question, Chris, and that is to text the word join to 617-751-6257, then click on the link to subscribe. That comes with a free 14-day trial period and, after that, a $4.99 per month charge.
And I think you'll find it worth it, as the people who submitted questions today did. Got about 16 questions, which is a great number. Sometimes we get more than that and we're overwhelmed and trying to pack it all in. So we appreciate that. I want to start with a question of my own before we move over to them. You're down there with Chris Smith right now, as we've documented on the pod, and there has been some news in the last couple days out of Red Sox camp. Josh Winkowski goes to the bullpen. I don't think that's a particularly big surprise. Opens up the door. I think Houck and either Whitlock or Criswell, who we had on the show last week. Kenley Jansen still delayed. Some other injury things here and there. Just what stood out to you in the last few days, which has been kind of a newsy few days down there?
Yeah, I don't think there's been anything terribly surprising there. I think we all saw Winkowski as somewhat of a long shot bid to transition to that rotation. He had success in the bullpen last year. He struggled with a 5+ ERA when he started for about 14 games in 2022. So no surprise there. Some cuts today, none of them, I think, caught anybody off guard. Some concern, I think, there has to be now about Kenley Jansen, scratched on Monday with a lower back stiffness or tightening. That came on the heels of him just getting over a lat injury and making his first Grapefruit League appearance on Friday. It was not a sharp one. He gave up two homers to, I think, five or six batters that he faced. And while they kept it pretty modest in terms of expectations for his workload this spring, this is a guy, he's had, 12, 13, 14 major league seasons. He's 36 years old. He knows what he has to do to get ready. They said from the beginning, five innings should do it. Well, here we are in the final week of their stay here in Fort Myers, and he's pitched exactly one as we record this. So he needs to get probably three in here before they leave on Sunday, and then one more appearance in Arlington, Texas on their way out to Seattle. And if there's any slippage here, if he has any setbacks or doesn't rebound well, then he probably will not be ready to go on opening day. Or if they want to carry him and hope that, you know, he's ready by the second or third game, they can get away with that for a few days. But they would probably want to backdate him and add another healthy arm as they do start the season with seven straight games without a day off. Seems to me you wouldn't want to do that early in the year without a full complement. Yeah, there's only a couple of decisions still be made here. The back end of the rotation, four and five starters, you noted, the makeup of the bullpen, and then a couple of bench guys, and they're pretty much where they need to be.
We'll start there. Craig Jones with the first question from the mailbag, a great segue. Asking about the first base battle, one we've talked about a lot, Bobby Dalbec versus CJ Krohn, still too close to call. I'm going to weigh in with what I said on the roster projection the other day. In these cases, I always go on the side of the guy you could lose. The Red Sox can carry CJ Krohn and option Bobby Dalbec against every one of his last wishes to AAA. He does have an option remaining, which I think we found to be one of the more surprising developments of the spring. You can keep Dalbec and Krohn by having Krohn on the roster on opening day. I've said it, different position, different players, but Raimel Tapia last year made the team and Jarren Duran went to AAA. Just so you can keep two guys in the organization, if you cut Krohn and he has an opt-out on Saturday and keep Dalbec, then you lose the player, you lose the depth. I know he's more defensively limited, but higher offensive floor, and you know the goal is to have as many reasonably good players as you possibly can, and I think that's why he has the edge there.
Yeah, I agree. It's all about roster control and the fact that you can manage to keep both of them if you option Dalbec and keep Krohn. I mean, this is a guy, let's not forget, who had 29 homers as recently as 2 years ago, his last fully healthy year.
An all-star and everything.
Right. So he's got a profile of being able to deliver. Now, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he adapts to this role, because this is not a starting first baseman or DH as he's been. This is a guy getting the occasional start against lefties and maybe pinch-hitting appearances off the bench. Sometimes guys who've had very good careers have a difficult time adjusting to that role. They need to get in the rhythm. They need to keep their swing in a rhythm by playing almost every day. Other than dealing with injuries, as he did last year with his back, this is a guy who's accustomed to playing most of the time. So how does he handle that? But I agree with you. At the end of the day, they want to see how that works and control both of them. If you option Dalbec, you may upset him, but you don't lose him. If you keep Dalbec and let Krohn go, you may live to regret that if he goes elsewhere and produces.
Another roster question on another battle that I don't think is a battle, but is one worth talking about. Daryl Ginetti, is there a world where Roberto Perez breaks with the team over Reese McGuire? We saw Tyler Heineman go down as one of the AAA catchers. Perez still in major league camp. I don't think so, but you're there. So what do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to get a read on that. I know that they are happy with what Perez represents defensively. And as a backup catcher, that has to be the priority. You're not expecting that you're going to have, you know, a big bat there in terms of your second catcher. McGuire's done a decent job in that role, but Perez does have the reputation of being a very good catch-and-throw guy, a guy who can handle a pitching staff. I could see that going either way. In a perfect world, they do something to entice Perez to not opt out, say, give us another month and let's see where we are. Spend April in Worcester and we'll give you another opt-out then. My guess is that's where this is headed, where McGuire makes the team and Perez says, yeah, I'll stay until May 1st, but after that, I'm leaving.
And you know what? Like, I had a great conversation with him in spring training. I think it's a good addition to the organization, just in terms of he's going to be able to have an impact here in Fort Myers even, or if he's in AAA, like he's a guy with a great track record. You know, he has barely played for like three seasons. He played five games last year, missed the whole year. It's really hard to think that another team would give him a major league opportunity at this point. Like if he opts out on Saturday, he just has not played enough really the last couple of years. With that, I think, you know, the most likely scenario and the one the Red Sox want for sure is that he goes down to AAA. And you have, you know, if that's the case, a better stable of backup options at that position. I know Alex Cora talked about it with you guys today down there than you've had in previous years. You know, Jorge Alfaro, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Red Sox history becoming the first catcher to ever hit the center field fence with a throw. It took a couple hops, but it got there. Caleb Hamilton, not a major league player, as we saw last year when McGuire got hurt. You have Heinemann, who's serviceable. You have Perez, Colasvari, the short guy, as Chris Smith wrote about. Like, they have an okay stable there of guys who are serviceable. We'll go to a question from Frank Prinsky now, and it is this. What is Brian Mata's expected status come opening day? I think from what I heard, he might be back to starting to throw or starting his progression, but definitely a guy who'll be on the injured list to start.
Yeah, no question. He's unavailable and will be backdated and put on the IL. It's going to be a while. And frankly, from the Red Sox standpoint, they're okay delaying that because ultimately they've got to make a decision when he is healthy to either add him because he's out of options to the major league roster or risk exposing him to waivers. And I had a major league executive tell me without any semblance of doubt that Mata would be claimed if the Red Sox tried to get him through. So ultimately, they're going to have to deal with a tough decision there. They'll have time, obviously, for him to begin a rehab stint in Worcester to get healthy, but they want to kick that can down the road as far as they can, I would think.
And he'll have 30 days in Worcester, and he doesn't have any options left. This is the loophole if he gets hurt, which he legitimately is, as he has been very often throughout his minor league career. This one comes from Charlie Weber for the podcast. Is Abreu just having a bad spring, and is Rafaello the real deal? Kind of reminds me of when JBJ had an excellent spring and made the team. He was pretty slow to start. Still worth it to watch him play center field. Does Rafaella have JBJ-level skills in center field? I think the answer is yes, with the added bonus of he can play the infield too in a pinch with Grissom out. Seems like they're going to try to do that with him a little bit here in the next couple weeks. And I think offensively, you know, there's risk there, just like there was with Jackie. And I think we both are kind of under the impression, especially with Ref Snyder out, that Rafaella will make the team as the everyday center fielder. I think it'd be a big surprise at this point if he doesn't. Your thoughts on that and what you've seen from Willie Abreu down there?
Yeah, Abreu did have a very slow start to the Grapefruit League season. A lot of strikeouts, but as Alex Cora noted more than a couple of times, a lot of walks too. So he at least is getting on base, even if he's not making more consistent contact. And lately, the at-bats have been better. He had a good day over the weekend with or Friday night with a 2-for-3 performance and starting to drive the ball a little bit more. I think they're pretty comfortable with him, and they're not going to overreact to, you know, 2.5 weeks of less than stellar at-bats on his part. He's got a plus-plus throwing arm. They think he can be at least a above league average right fielder in Fenway, and I think they're committed to him. And I agree with you. I think Rafaella makes the team. He's got sky high potential in terms of speed and defense. It's all about having better at bats, which he has shown. He's been more selective. He's made better swing decisions, and I think he will make it. Whether he stays when Ref Snyder is healthy and things get a little clearer will depend on how he plays for the first few weeks.
From Jonathan Morrison, kind of wrapping up some roster talk here. Do you think there will be any surprises with the roster for opening day? And do you think the Red Sox will add anyone prior to opening day? You've heard that they are going to be actively looking at that opt-out market. You know, we're going to see that on Saturday. For those who don't know, this kind of applies to the Red Sox in terms of Roberto Perez, Joely Rodriguez, and CJ Cron. Any major league free agent who signs a minor league deal gets the chance to opt out 5 days before opening day if they don't make the team. There will be guys available. I could see them dipping into that market. In terms of bigger additions, Sean, you still think, as I do, that that is probably not too likely?
Yeah, well, a couple of guys are off the board that we had talked about, Duvall being one of them, and Tommy Pham having interest from San Diego and a number of other teams. So unlikely that the Red Sox are going to go spend $3 million or more on a bench part right now, but they certainly will be looking at what the opt-out options are, both for their own guys, who they would like to retain, and to see if there's any way that there's an upgrade out there and an opportunity to offer something to someone here. I think the difficulty is that with Ref Snyder under contract, and admittedly, it's not a big deal. It's only 1.8 with a $200,000 buyout for next year on an option. So you're talking about a grand total of $2 million. But they do have a guaranteed deal for him. And if you're looking to bring in another right-handed hitting outfielder who opts out, what kind of guarantees can you assure him once Ref Snyder is healthy? So they're gonna, it's going to have to be somebody that they clearly like better than Ref Snyder, and he's got to be told and convinced that this is just not for April, that he has a chance to stay here all year. We'll see how that goes.
And tying a bow on additions, Thomas Howland, anything going on with Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery? Do the Red Sox have any shot at them? I don't think so still. And Alex Speer pointed out the way they did Bayo's deal with the CBT ramifications, bumping that up $9 million, getting it to 215 or so, makes it even less likely that they would not probably be able to squeeze either of those guys under 237 in that fake money threshold, as they say. But I do think, you know, and I don't know if I made this point, I guess not, because we had the last pod was Martin, which you did, and then we had Criswell. The Dylan Cease trade, I think, even like we've been talking about the low chances the whole time, the Dylan Cease trade to me even makes those chances even weaker, because he goes to a surprise team that wasn't supposed to get him, that's not in on these guys. If he had gone to like the Rangers or the Angels or the Giants,
if he had shut a door for one of those two, it might have changed things.
Yeah, but he went to a team that wasn't in on Snell or Montgomery because of their unique financial situation. And so it kind of, you know, one less opportunity for those teams. And I think, you know, we see the Astros now in on Snell with some of their injuries. The Cubs could be lurking. Like, I think these guys still have strong markets, believe it or not, even though it's March 18th. The question is, will they be able to ramp up in time in 10 days, which is a crazy conversation to have about the top two pitchers, non-Yamamoto category on this year's market.
Yeah, and one being the reigning Cy Young Award winner in the National League. This is, you know, Montgomery's a solid number three, maybe, you know, on a good day, or a pretty good number two. But Blake Snell has won two Cy Young Awards, one in each league. And while you can question his workload and his ability to pitch deep into games, he is a front of the rotation guy. And the fact that he's sitting out there, you know, 9 days before the regular season starts is still pretty amazing.
And he's not alone. As Josh Nason points out, outside of Snell Montgomery, are there two or three free agents you're both surprised aren't signed anywhere yet? I mean, Michael Lorenzen, I know he was not great with Philly down the stretch, but, you know, that third, fourth starter type got paid this winter. Frankie Montas got 1 year for $16 million. So I'm a little surprised he's out there. And J.D. Martinez had a really good year, you know? Like, I know Red Sox fans don't want to hear that after, you know, letting him walk, even though Turner had a really good year too. But the fact that those guys are unemployed 10 days before opening day, you know, it's not just, you know, the Snell and Montgomery people right now. It's others. And also I'll mention that you and I are both really high on Adam Duvall. I said the Red Sox should re-sign him all winter, not just because he's the nicest guy we've ever had come through the clubhouse here, but he also had a really good year. The fact that he had that year and got his pay cut from $7 million to $3 million speaks about this middle class getting squeezed, and it's the game's going to do something about that.
Yeah, particularly middle-class guys in their early to mid-30s. And, you know, frankly, in Duvall's case, one with some durability issues, no fault of his own. We're not accusing him of being soft, but he's had significant hand injuries that have cost him a lot of time each of the last couple of years. And I'm sure that scared some people off. It's been a while since he's played, you know, 120 or more games.
Thomas McCready III weighs in with another Snell Montgomery question. Is it possible the price for those guys drops enough that John Henry and the Red Sox might reconsider it and sign one anyway? It has to be a worthwhile investment at some point. I always caution here, and this is something somebody told us earlier in the offseason, hey, if the price drops for the Red Sox, it means it's dropping for everyone else.
Right. Yeah, I would put the chances of either one of those guys at minuscule now. There's been no reporting anywhere from national people that they are seriously involved in maintaining contact. I'm sure that, you know, they have regular conversations with Scott Boras about a number of topics, but they do not seem to be players for either one of those two guys.
Luke McCracken with a question on a player who has been talked about a little bit the last couple of days. Someone sent down Nick York, with Nick York getting off to a slow start in camp. Had some hits and defensive plays, but hit 091. It has me wondering, does this affect his value in trade talks? My feeling is that if things go well and the Sox decide let's add a new face at the deadline, York feels like a name they would be inclined to move with Grissom on the roster. I mean, I'll add not just Grissom, but you anticipate your middle infield at some point soon is going to be Meyer and Story with Grissom in the mix there is kind of what they're hoping. Good problem to have and all that. Does 22 spring training plate appearances torpedo trade value? I tend to think not.
No, probably not, but he is blocked here. There's no getting around that. And Alex Cora said that he is going to be tried in the outfield. That makes it sound like he's in some legal difficulty. He's not being tried in the outfield. He's going to get an opportunity to play in the outfield. The problem there is, you know, you can be a 275, 340, 450 guy at second base and have value. You can't have those numbers as a corner outfielder. You've got to produce. You've got to be a run producer. You've got to have a little pop. And to date, he hasn't been able to show that on a consistent basis. So if you're going to market him as an outfielder, whether it's to be used here as a depth piece or to be put in a trade, he's got to up his offensive production at the minor league level too to match that outfielder profile.
Yeah, I mean, being blocked does not torpedo trade value. We saw Grissom move and Tar Heel Michael Bush move this year in similar situations, but you know, it really comes down to, does York have that much value on his own, separate of all that? Two kind of related questions on Jaron Duran from J.M. Wilson. Would love to check back in on some of the defensive preparations that some of the younger players are making. Have you seen anything on Duran or Casas? What are they working on? How's it going? And to your eyes, does the work seem to be bearing any fruit? And from Jason Parker, do you think it makes sense to make a Duran trade at the deadline if the Red Sox view Rafaela as an everyday center fielder and not trade bait? I don't think Duran fits long-term. Lefty, stuck in left field on the older side for a young guy, especially with Roman Anthony coming soon. Part two of that, I mean, there is a clear logjam coming with outfielders. Again, a good problem to have. Roman Anthony, Abreu, you know, there's already kind of probably too many guys on the roster with Ref Snyder and, you know, Rafaela in the mix. But you add Roman Anthony to that in a couple of years, and you still have Yoshida on the roster for 4 years, who now more a DH, but also an outfield type. You know, I think they're going to continue to look at potential ways of trading those guys. And if they're, you know, selling at the deadline, I think that could be an avenue. Defensively, have you seen any kind of strides from Duran or Casas to this point?
Well, Alex Cora liked the way he handled some plays in right field over the weekend when they had him in right. I think it was Friday night against the Twins. Charged the ball nicely, had a decent throw. But, you know, he still is not as good defensively as either Abreu or Rafaela, which is why he could be in some trouble here. Or Tyler, let's put it this way. You now have four outfielders, subtracting the injured Ref Snyder and taking Yoshida out of the question. You have four outfielders here, O'Neill, Rafaela, Abreu, and Duran. And of those four, Duran is the worst defender of the four. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that puts things in perspective. And when you're talking about trying to be a better defensive team.
And it's not like he's horrible. Like those guys.
No, but yeah. You would rank, if you were to rank them, he would be fourth on almost any evaluator's list.
Mm-hmm.
And for a team that has made getting better defensively, particularly in the outfield, behind the pitching staff, to be a priority, then that has to hurt Duran about when it comes to claiming playing time. As for Casas, you know, I think a lot with him is maybe shedding some weight, which I think he did from last year, and also improving the footwork. You hear that all the time about young first basemen. Got to be comfortable with the footwork, taking throws, you know, playing off the bag, being able to get back to the bag when you're ranging to your right. He does look a little quicker. I think he's athletic enough to at least be a league average first baseman. I know the defensive metrics were really not good at all last year. I think he can be better and will be better than that.
And I will note that he, you know, down the stretch last year when he was playing every day and not splitting time with Turner, was better when he was playing more consistently.
Yeah, he was better in the second half.
This comes from, I can see the last name is Manning, so not sure if it's Peyton or Arch or whoever, Cooper, Eli. lots of high risk reward types on the roster this year are guys who are younger but haven't put it together consistently yet. Who is your favorite to take a meaningful step forward and be a consistent contributor? I'm going to go with, despite the spring struggles, Abreu. I think he's just had, you know, he looked good last year in limited sample size. You know, I wrote this in my thing today about the extensions, or I guess as you hear this Tuesday, we're recording Monday, cat's out of the bag. The Red Sox probably, like, would have traded Alex Verdugo because they were sick of dealing with him, but they also, it made it a lot more palatable to do that because they felt really strongly about who they had replacing him in right field, and almost immediately they said they wanted Willie Abreu to take that job, and I think they're very high on him. You know, I think they were higher on him than prospect charts had him, so he's my choice just because it's an advanced at bat. The arm plays in right field, and he's going to get a great, great chance. I think a lot of these guys are, but we know he is.
Yeah, I think you could go back and forth between Rafaela and Abreu. Different types of players, obviously. Abreu with the ability to get on base already, but some contact issues. An above average corner outfielder, a plus arm, maybe even plus arm. But Rafaela has amazing athleticism. He has plus speed, a plus defender, somewhere in the middle of the diamond, whether it be shortstop or here, center field. So I would say that Rafaela's ceiling is higher, so I'm going with him, but I think both are going to take significant steps forward this season.
Somewhat of a housekeeping question from Chris Connor. I'll take care of it quickly. The difference between being assigned to Worcester and being assigned to minor league camp. When they send guys to minor league camp, they send them literally to a different clubhouse. They pack up their bags in the major league clubhouse at Fenway South. They move right down the street, basically, or down the pathway to the minor league clubhouse. And then when spring training ends, they will all be assigned to different minor league teams. You can kind of figure out where they're going based on where they were last year. If they're an older minor league free agent, likely go to Worcester. And it's just a baseball roster rules thing. It's announced as being sent to AAA Worcester if you're on the 40-man roster. And if you're not, then you're just assigned to minor league camp. It can be figured out later.
I was going to say it has more to do with whether you're on the 40-man roster, in which case you're optioned to an affiliate, or whether you are a non-roster invite returned to minor league camp, and then they don't have to designate that right away.
Daniel asks, I'd love to know how the pitching staff stuff is looking based on StatCast data through spring training. I think that's not really available at every ballpark, right? It's here and there.
That's correct.
And they did turn the radar gun off for Kenley Jansen the other night, notably.
Yes, and the conspiracy theories were rife today because the Twins facility is not armed with StatCast capability, so people thought the reason he was going to pitch today was that there would be no, look, guess what? There are scouts who have their own radar guns. So if you're worried about Kenley Jansen's trade value because his velo isn't up yet, whether you post that on the scoreboard or not, the evaluators and scouts who are watching in the seats can see it and measure it themselves. It's kind of a non-issue.
Joseph Gleason in our second to last question here. Do you think the Red Sox will be willing buyers at the deadline if they're close enough to contending for a playoff spot? Yes, but I'll caution that with, you know, everything Craig Breslow said about this season is that he wants to build for the future. So similarly to last year with Heim Bloom, in this world where they are in the wild card race, I don't see them trading for rentals really in any way unless they are like leading the division in 15 games above 500, which we don't think is likely.
Yeah, I would say it would be shocking if they were in that case. And it's more likely that even in a best case scenario, they are on the outskirts or the periphery of the wild card chase. And then they're in that difficult position of having to decide, do we add, do we subtract, do we do nothing, do we do a little bit of both? But I'd be surprised, you know, this team's not going to go trade for Max Scherzer or a big high salaried impact rental. That's for sure.
Last one comes from longtime friend of the program, Neil Flanagan, emerging from the tax season bunker for a couple minutes this morning at 9 a.m. to send in a question. If only his partner, my father, could do the same at the next office. Odds makers are predicting the Red Sox to finish last in the American League East again this year. Neil asked, do you see anything in spring training that would change that? I would say the biggest thing that's happened in spring training only reinforces that, and that's the Giolito injury.
Yeah, that certainly was a setback. I would say this. I have talked to some people around the game who, across the board, have been telling me how bad the Tampa Bay Rays look. They are without a lot of their front pitching. They traded Glasnow. They are without McClanahan. They are without one or two, right, a couple of other starters. And they do not look good on the field. Now, I'll temper that by the fact that the Rays are always better than people think they're going to be. But for the Red Sox to get out of the cellar, another team's got to drop behind them. So take that for what it's worth. But a lot of people raising questions about how good the Rays are going to be and whether they might be in a position to take a step backward. I think the Red Sox could be quasi-competitive, by which I mean 500. And if they get to 82 wins, who's to say that Tampa Bay doesn't have an off year and only win 79?
People always say we're negative on this podcast and we always look miserable.
Could I be mean, fourth.
Listen Could to be. That. This is, I mean, get out the angry emails calling us homers after that one. Another exciting pod coming for you. That's a good preview of it there. The predictions pod, the annual Mass Live predictions roundtable. If you listen last year, I don't know what was worse. This was before Sean was hired, but at his old job, he picked the same Cy Young Award winner as me, Alek Manoah. Didn't go great. But of course, the highlight being Matt Votor saying that correctly that the rookie of the year was going to be Henderson on the Orioles, incorrectly calling him Gunnar, which is inexplicable for someone who's English with English as his first language. So we look forward to seeing what Matt will colossally screw up when we record that later in the week. Again, as always, we appreciate the submissions on the Fenway Rundown Insider Text program. If you want into the next mailbag episode, oh yeah, Sean, this is your read.
Then all you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257. There is a link there to subscribe. If you click that, we will give you 14-day free trial period, and after that, we will charge you the low, low price of $4.99 per month.
Good time to sign up. Opening day 10 days away. So do it.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.